Americas, live and underway here on ESPN Plus as we show you the beautiful scenery from the Souk Waqif in downtown Doha. That's the market. That's where we go for all our big-time shopping here in Qatar. That's where Herc spends all his money.
You say we do our big-time shopping?
Yeah.
You go shop there?
You know me. I'm not a shopper at all. You guys go to, like, the luxury
brands. You told me you were looking
stores.
For the gold.
I was.
I want to know where the gold at.
Supposedly, there's a very interesting gold market there that you can go. I don't know. I don't know much about gold, but I know.
Things I never thought
I
would
My mom and my
hear.
Wife love gold, okay?
Things so. I never thought I would hear.
So
do you want
listen,
me to get away?
I want to pull the curtain back a little
away.
Bit here because producer Beto just literally said we're too close. It's not a visual thing. They just have to keep us far apart because we might start throwing bows at any time. Limbs, as they say,
you don't
as they say
it.
In England.
You don't want none of this.
All right, so plenty coming up in this edition of Football Americas. We have the quarterfinal field set now, Herc. The last eight is set.
It's done. No more games.
Well, of the round of 16.
I know. Yes. I mean, we got a day off. Can we have a day off? I need a day off. I need a day off from
you
Seb.
You need a day off from work or from Seb? Because those are
Both.
Two different things.
Both.
Why don't you show us your shirt again there? What you got there?
You know what I got. What does it say?
Classic.
I am
Zlatan
like
Ibrahimovic.
A Ferrari. Among Fiat.
Yes, that's how I feel sometimes on this show. And your boy has the anti-VAR social club.
Are you one of those people?
I think in this tournament it's annoying
me. You call VAR VAR.
VAR? What would you have me call it? VAR?
VAR.
Okay. I'll work on that among many things.
No, because there's two sets of people.
Yes. Which one do you fall into?
It's just VAR.
Okay, the opposite of the one I fall into, I'm sure.
No, it's video assistant referee, actually.
So coming up, we're going to talk about Alexis Vega. Okay, Mexican international, had himself a decent World Cup, linked to a major, major European club. So we'll dive into that. We'll also recap Portugal against Switzerland, which just wrapped up, not very close. Morocco against Spain, which wrapped up a few hours ago, very, very close. And then for some reason, Herc, after their brilliant performance, there seems to be a lot of people lining up to take shots at Brazil. So we'll dive in on that, which is weird. It's always when you do well that people come for you. But let's start. On the transfer
wire. Now you
wire.
Know how I feel.
Really? Where there's plenty of U.S. internationals who are getting attention.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Key among them, or first that we'll discuss, is Yunus Musa. Currently at Valencia, of course. Fabrizio Romano, he of Here We Go fame, reporting Arsenal have sent scouts to monitor the youngster. Also, apparently, there's interest from Inter Milan, according to Romano. Musa could leave anywhere between January and June. So lots of ways we can break this down. Let's start just with the leagues and the options there. According to what you feel about Yunus Musa's football, which league suits his style best? Where he is right now, La Liga, Premier League, or Serie A?
Ooh. I like La Liga for him.
Really?
I do. I had questions and doubts about Yunus Musa's physical abilities. A lot of those he answered in this World Cup. I thought physically he was fantastic. One of the major doubts I had about Yunus Musa was the lack of productivity, right?
End but product, yeah, yeah.
End product, if you will.
I think you at one point compared him to Darlington Nagby.
Darlington Nagby. And what are you laughing at?
I mean, of your bad takes, equally, that's got to be at the top of the pile.
Well, you should ask Darlington Nagby about that.
Darlington Nagby would love to have had the career Yunus Musa is going to have.
Going to have?
Yeah.
Okay, so what are we talking about? Yunus Musa is a very talented player.
I'm not going
to
argue with you about Darlington Nagby comparison to Yunus Musa. I'll let Twitter destroy you for that. Make your point about Yunus Musa.
The U.S. will win a World Cup because USL and MLS. But they'll destroy me for that. Listen, he's a very talented player. And a lot of the doubts I had about him physically have been answered in this group phase. I think he'll run with the best of them. Like, I didn't know physically that he would be that good, that dominant. He was really that good in the group stage. But a lot of things that he's very good for, he didn't do this World Cup. But I know he can do them. I like the Premier League, but not over La Liga. He's so technical. He is so technical, and he's so good in between the boxes. He is so shifty at getting in and out of things. His ability to drive a ball. Honestly, and I know you laugh at this, I've only seen from Darlington Nagby in the U.S. pool like in the last decade. I've only seen that from Darlington Nagby. That's why I made that comparison. Like, he's literally the only one with that ability to drive out of there. He's in a field of his own when we talk about U.S. men's national team players in that category. I love that for him in La Liga. I think he'll find a nice home in La Liga. But the Premier League is a different animal. Serie A is a different animal when it comes to defensively.
See, I see him, and I see a player, like, I'm going to make a comparison here, like a Luca Della Torre. Overwhelmingly technical, right? So we say, oh, La Liga would be a good fit. I feel like Yunus Musa does a lot of things well. Are you feeling like he would be a bad fit for a Premier League or a Serie A, or you just think the best fit is La Liga? Because I think he'd be a good fit anywhere. I don't really see...
Where do you want to... You just told me that Darlington wishes he's going to wish he had the career. So where do you want to... Where do you think he's going to end up? Champions League team?
Like at the highest level
possible.
At the
highest level?
Where you'd want to see
him. That's what, do you think he's going to end up there?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's going to end up in a top six English Premier League team.
Or a top team
in
La Liga.
No. He's going to play on those teams, is what you're telling me. Which one?
What?
You're telling me that you see him having a great career.
Yes.
So that would be a top league, right?
Mm-hmm.
Top team.
Right.
Where do you see him? Because you say you love England for him. Where do you see him playing?
No. I'm asked. The question was to you. Do you think he's like not a good fit for the Premier League? Is there something lacking in his game, this Premier League? Because what you're saying is he's great for La Liga, but what is it about like Premier League or Serie A?
He's got more of an ability to play at a higher team in La Liga than he does at a higher team in the English Premier League.
Okay.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, every club would be its own conversation, right? Like,
would you agree with that?
I don't know. I don't. I think there's some English. Wait,
just the fact that you're having doubts. Whereas in case,
I think there's less.
Case,
but there's less.
There's a better opportunity to him being a Champions League player in and out if he was in La Liga.
If we're saying big clubs in England, there's six of them.
I just
right?
told you.
There's only three in Spain. Two in Spain. We count Atleti as three.
Atleti would be three. Yeah.
Okay, and that's it. So there's, in theory, double the opportunity in the Premier League than there would be to be on a big club in Spain, right? So just from a numbers standpoint, I could see there being more. You know, more opportunities in the Premier League. And I don't think that the Premier League is necessarily not suitable to him. And I'm trying to understand if you think that or if you just are saying that.
Because I don't want. Here's my rationale. I don't want to see Yunus Musa playing in a club. I think he's a Champions League player. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very good player. I don't think he's a Champions League player in the Premier League because I think those teams are in a field of they're a league of their own.
Atleti, Sevilla, that kind of next tier in Spain is more accessible than. Even the top six.
You see him playing for City?
In England.
Do you see him playing for Arsenal?
I mean, he's linked to Arsenal, so...
Do you see him playing there?
Well, right now, no.
Okay.
Right now, no. So let's dive in on Arsenal, because that's the real actual one we can point to. Do you think that he would start at Arsenal or Inter Milan?
Arsenal, probably not. Inter... Maybe, because you and I had spoken about this off-air a little bit. If you're going for Yunus Musa, you're also banking on his future, right? So it's not like a you-gotta-play-now type of deal, even though I want to see him play now type of deal.
For the club, it's not that.
Correct.
For the player, yeah,
of course.
It might be something
it should always be that.
Yes.
I was talking to Matteo Bonetti, a good friend, and he said, listen, that's an aging midfield, and with the exception of Barella, they're all in their 30s, and they may start thinking, like, hey, what's next if you're Inter? I don't know if Yunus wants that right now or needs that. I like the fact that he plays right now for Gattuso. And Gattuso's not I'm not a fan of Gattuso. You know, I saw what he did to Chucky Lozano and Napoli, and I wasn't really keen on that. That wasn't really something that got me excited for a young player. But he's been thriving under Gattuso. I know it's a mid-table team right now, but Valencia is one of those teams that kind of fluctuates in and out of that Champions League, Europa League zone. I don't mind where he's at right now. I see the necessity for Yunus to want to take that step.
Is he ready for it? Because I'll go back to the Greg Berhalter comments of, like, don't make the jump until you're dominating the place you're at. He's playing well, but it's only this season that he's really established himself as a starter in what we believe to be his best position. It would seem like almost he could use some more seasoning at Valencia before he were to try to make, whether it's Arsenal or Inter Milan or anywhere else, that jump.
We actually had this conversation who was it with? I forget who he had this conversation with. But literally, this is his first season in his preferred position at Valencia. He was playing on the wing at Valencia. And do you know how sometimes politics come into play of whether you stay or you go? Valencia's hand may be forced at some point where they have to sell him. And he's one of those bargaining chips that they're going to have or that they have at this moment right now. So it may be like the market's there. We have to sell him. But I wouldn't move in right now. I wouldn't. And where do you go from here? Unless you see him, in my mind, playing in a top league.
Right.
And I'll leave Ligue 1 unless it's PSG out of this. Top league, okay? the next step for Yunus has to be a Champions League move.
I'm looking at the Arsenal options, right? Granit Xhaka, Partey, Elneny, Lokonga is kind of the fourth guy in those positions. Xhaka's contract's up in 2024. Elneny's contract is up. They just extended it, but only for a year. So it's up at the end of the 23 season. So there are spaces there coming at Arsenal. If you're Yunus Musa, you're only 20. You just turned 20.
You're taking an understudy for a year is what you're telling me if you're Yunus
Musa. What would you do? Would you say no to a big club that clearly wants you and has you in a future plan?
I don't know if he can say no to Arsenal.
And there's also the reality.
I don't think he can say no to
Arsenal.
There's
so many games, dude. You're going to play League Cup. Sure. You're going to play
Europa
FA
League,
Cup. You're going to play
Champions League. Whatever
European,
they got. We don't know where they'll be in those. We don't know where they'll be.
Producer Beto, who's an Arsenal fan, is bitter about the Europa
We don't
League
know where they will be is what I'm trying
but
to tell you. And they've got Carabao Cup,
him,
the FA Cup. I understand what you're saying. Yes, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Yunus could say no to an Arsenal.
Right.
And there's a personal story to that. I mean, he started there.
Mm-hmm.
There might be that spinita clavada. Mm-hmm. There might be that part of him that wants that, hey, you know what? This would be great for me. This is where I want to be. This is home. There could be that. He's got such a high ceiling. He's such a good player. There's a few pieces that are missing that he can get there. I didn't think he had the physical aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And what he showed me in this World Cup is he absolutely has it.
Yeah.
There are things that he keeps surprising us with. I still think he needs more in product. I don't think that's an opinion. I think those are numbers.
Yeah.
You could see that. But he's just so good, and he keeps impressing me. And what I love about him is just his overall look and attitude on things.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing he's ever said, I don't want that challenge. It's always been like, I'll try that challenge.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, right? For some guys, it's more valuable to be at a great level, maybe not playing as much. For some guys, it's more important to play. I think the younger you are, the more important it probably is to play.
I see you take a lot of stock into Twitter comments and stuff.
In 20 years
old. It really affects you, huh?
What's that?
Twitter comments.
Hey, bro, you want to keep making the Darlington Nagy Yunus Musa comparisons? Have at it, Hoss.
Hey, what won't bother me on Twitter?
All right, let's talk about Anthony Robinson. Inter Milan apparently also interested in Robinson, the Fulham left back. The Sun reported a week ago, and I should have looked this up before I made the bet with producer Beto, that Inter are ready to offer 20 million euros for Anthony Robinson. What would be better for this young American defender, Herc? Going to Inter, one of the top teams in Italy, right now fifth in the table, 11 points back of Napoli, or remaining in the Premier League, which everyone says is the best league in the world, with Fulham, who are right now mid-table, but very much, I think, most people preseason would have said
relegation battle,
likely to be in a relegation dogfight at some point.
I like Fulham for him. I think that's about the level I see for him.
Okay.
He's very good at a few things. He's good at a lot of things, but a few things he stands out for. He's defensively pretty sound.
Yeah. He's a big guy for a left back. A lot of
he's
left backs now are
kind
of smaller.
Powerful player.
Yeah.
Good engine. He actually, when he can get a cross off, decent cross.
Yeah.
Like he's actually
consistent with the left
consistent
foot.
Consistent with the left foot. And he's got a bit of end product to go with it. He comes into the box, gets his fair share of shots on goal. We saw in World Cup qualifying some goals scored. Not exactly the most privileged left foot. Technical ability is an issue there.
Right.
We saw it against the
You're
Netherlands.
Talking not about crosses, but touch on the ball, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And if you go to a team like Inter, I think that's a must.
Right. Because in Fulham, you're defending a lot as opposed to like
you
Inter's.
You defend a lot. Yeah. Inter's.
Bossing games, right?
They are bossing games.
In theory,
and they're more in the offensive third.
Right.
And
Italy,
over the
anyway.
Years, they've been a team that's been pretty easy on the eyes. He's more of that.
Yeah.
Force down the left-hand
right.
side, and not so much technical ability like a Serginho Dest to get in and out of things, and I think that's more of an Inter style. But if they're willing to, and I don't know if this is the case, because this is just a report, like we've not heard an actual, to my like incredible source on this, where it's going to happen or it's something that's on the brink of happening.
I love where your subjective line of credibility is, but go on.
Wait, what is always subjective?
Wherever you choose to draw the line of what's a credible report or not.
For Italian football, Fabrizio Romano would be pretty credible.
Okay.
He
confirmed the interest from Inter Milan.
Did he confirm the interest?
Yes.
Well, I guess it's there then. Because spoke to somebody earlier and they said until Fabrizio puts it up, don't believe anything. But if you're telling me he put it up, all right. That's what you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying.
As far as I know, yeah.
As far as you know. Okay. Good player?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Inter? No, I don't think that's correct style for him. I don't think that's... But that said... If you can get to a team like Inter, they spent 20 million on you, go.
Yeah.
Because that's the one missing piece in your game. If that could help you evolve that game, go. Do I think he's ready for that right now? No.
So it's not the first time that Italian clubs, big ones, have shown interest.
It was actually the other Milan, right?
Yeah, a couple years ago. AC Milan basically, it appears, had the deal done with Wigan, and then there was...
Heart murmur.
Yeah, there was like a problem with the physical. They wanted to do more. The transfer window closed, and he ends up missing the move. Inter right now has a left back, Federico Di Marco, and apparently there's a lot of interest in abroad. Manchester City, Wolves, they want... Inter wants competition for DeMarco, but they also, I think, probably need a backup plan, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to go somewhere as a backup plan. My question to you, because here's where I see the difference in a Fulham-Inter Milan. At Inter, you are much more likely to get European competition and Champions League football. So to a footballer, what's the value of that? Because you're not getting that at Fulham.
The value of that is iron sharpens iron.
Right.
That's the value of it. Whereas in Fulham, he's been there for a while. He's been the man for a while. Mm-hmm. I believe at one point, Pep Guardiola threw his flowers at him, talking about Anthony Robinson. He's been a good player, so there's a value to being somewhere where you constantly compete. And I'm not saying he doesn't compete at Fulham, but he's already kind of dominated the Fulham hole, if you will, the Fulham
space,
orbit.
Right.
Space, yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
He's already dominated that, if you
will. To Berhalter's point about locking down a job, being
doesn't mean
dominant.
He's dominated the Premier League space, but
that
Fulham.
Level.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a good point. All right, let's go even bigger picture in terms of Americans, because it does genuinely seem like right now, coming off this World Cup, the round of 16 exit, but also getting out of the group phase, that there is like a lot of interest right now in terms of American players. So if we take those two guys off the table, who for you is the American that is most up their stock through the four games at this World Cup?
Okay. I'm thinking about actual stock. Like, who can up their stock unknown to the rest of the world, if you will? And it got me thinking, like, nobody's stock has gone up more. Not even in the American market, like Timothy Weah. It's literally Timothy Weah is the one guy right now that you would have to really say took his play to the next level. Whether it's on the ball or off the ball, this man has proved his worth offensively. Christian Pulisic may have been your most productive player in this World Cup, but the most dangerous player for the U.S. men's national team was without a doubt Timothy Weah. And Leo, while it may be a good level, okay, I don't think it's the level for him. I think there are bigger clubs out there for him. And at Leo, I mean, he was playing right back, right wing back not too long ago.
Like,
there's bigger and better out there for him.
So he's playing some right wing back.
Somebody saved him from this purgatory.
And even when he's... playing, he's not playing much. He had 317 minutes, you know, this season. So some of that's injuries, but he's either playing out of position or not playing. He's 23 years old. His contract expires in 2024. So what's the importance of that? Well, it might be that Leo right now it's an easy out. And if they wait any longer, if they wait 6 months, now he's a player with 1 year left in his deal, and if you're looking at him as a long-term project, which most teams probably would be at a 23-year-old, then you just say, oh, he's got a year left on his deal. We'll just wait
6 months
and get him on a free.
You right? wait 6 months.
Exactly. And that's... so I think there's a motivation here potentially for Leal to sell based on him boosting his stock. Just to clear something up, so Fabrizio Romano did confirm that there's interest from Inter Milan in Anthony Robinson. Where he said there wasn't interest, I believe this is what you're referencing, is Tyler Adams. There were some other links, but he cleared that up, that Tyler Adams and Inter Milan, there had not been maybe direct there. So let's just clear that up. And it's interesting that it's Tyler Adams, because that's who I'm going with for stock up, right? I feel like Tim Weah's a great shout, but if we talk about players who jumped off the screen at you for what they did in pretty much all the games, except for Netherlands, and maybe there's something to be said about at that elite level, he didn't shine like he did in the first three games. But my man covered more than 8 miles of ground, right? Which sounds like a random stat, but I feel like in today's football, it's very important. He did it against both Wales, and he did it against Iran. And he was still pretty fresh, right, by the fourth game. So incredible fitness. My thing with Tyler Adams is I don't know from a market standpoint and from like what the other options might be that there's like a better place for him than Leeds.
Well, that's one base stock up. That's,
right. No, the stock is up.
Right.
But in terms of impacting a move, I don't know that there's necessarily a next jump to be made. One, because I don't think he's dominated Leeds yet. He just got there. He's playing well, but he's not dominating
quite
yet.
Yeah.
Sure, but it's just such a small sample size. But I think it's also a great situation. One, it's a style that fits him, and two, it's a manager that loves him. So I feel like Tyler Adams' stock is up. I don't know that I necessarily want to see that translate into a move right now.
Yeah, do you
want
to know why
that?
I didn't pick Tyler Adams?
Why?
Because that's not stock up. I mean, maybe to the rest of the world because they're figuring him out.
Well, like, that's who we're talking about when we're talking about transfer market, right?
No, we're talking about stock up. What I'm talking about is to the casual viewer outside of the U.S. market. Oh, I didn't know this guy. But you don't think in the world market people know who Tyler Adams is? You can't get that much higher of a transfer fee than going to Leipzig to Leeds. I don't know how much higher of a move you're going to get from Leeds at this exact moment. Think about the teams that could potentially be higher than that for him. Who are they?
Well, an Inter Milan, let's say. Had that been like a real, would you have said that would be a bad fit for Tyler Adams? Because that's definitely a move up from a Leeds, right? Or no?
I don't know. Do you think it's a move up from the Premier League from a team?
That's what I don't know. Like, that's why I'm leaning on you as the player. Like, how important is the opportunity for European football? Because Leeds, you're not going to Europe, right? You're not going to European, like, competition.
Wolves went to European competition not 2 years ago. So, maybe. I know what you're trying to get at. Inter will always be in European competition. But when you look at a lot of these players' dreams, especially Tyler Adams, because he said it, the Premier League.
Right.
Would leaving the Premier League with a coach that knows you in a setup where you're known right now.
I mean, that's the point I made, right? That, like, it's a really good spot.
But that's why I'm trying to tell you that it wasn't my stock up.
Right.
Because where are you going to go?
There it is. Fair enough.
That's a good shout.
Tell him what he said.
Well, Lautaro Martinez, if you prefer Leeds to Inter. And this moment. But no, I don't think he cares about Scudettos. I think there's other things, and there, you have a ceiling of what you can earn at a Inter than what you could earn in the Premier League.
All right. What about Christian Pulisic? How do you think his World Cup impacted his stock as far as the potential move is concerned?
It's funny because Christian Pulisic, I mean, he's the face of U.S. soccer. Everybody around you, everybody in or around that knows Christian Pulisic is the face of U.S. soccer. Why not? He may not be the best player in the tournament for the U.S. men's national team because that
wasn't far from it, right?
Was Tyler Adams. But it was Tyler Adams, right? You agree with that?
Christian Pulisic had a hand in every single goal, and they didn't do much offensively. They would have done nothing offensively without him.
Who's the player of the tournament for you, for the U.S.?
It's between those two.
Who is it?
I could make an argument for Pulisic.
No, just tell me who it is.
Pulisic.
Okay. So while Christian Pulisic is the face of U.S. soccer, and everybody in or around U.S. soccer knows that, even those foreign-based entities know it's Christian Pulisic. They don't give him the respect he deserves. There's always a but when it comes to Christian Pulisic. But he's a role player at Chelsea. But he didn't really play with Frank Lampard until he did, and then he did well. But he wasn't really playing with Thomas Tuchel until he did, and he did well. But he wasn't really playing with Graham Potter until he did, and he did well. There's always a but with Christian Pulisic. Not here. Now he's doing it at the international level, at the World Cup, and against known commodities. Wait a second. He played that type of game against the English national team? Wait a second. Christian Pulisic on the ball? Is this somebody I got to watch out for? Christian Pulisic, without a doubt, had himself a great tournament. Without a doubt, opened eyes that before were maybe a little gray, a little hazy on.
Yeah. I think the difference is, like, the bar is higher for who Pulisic has to impress, right? Because you're leaving a Chelsea. You're not taking a step down. We talked about it with Mark Ogden, right? You're not going to a Valencia or a Marseille, I think, were the two clubs that he picked out of hand. Exactly. So you have to really have performed at such a level to catch the attention of a, per se, Manchester United. What I do think he did is he boosted his potential transfer sale when that does happen, which I think is ultimately the motivator for Chelsea, right? At the end of the day, if truthfully the manager doesn't see him as a future part of this team and the club is willing to move on from him, which according to Mark Ogden, that's kind of where they are.
Yeah, but Mark went as far as to say on a free, which I don't think is happening.
No, I think Chelsea's a business. We know now they're run by an American businessman. Yeah. They're going to want to get that money back. They want those $70 million that they put in, at least recoup some of that, right? And I think
the number right now was, what, 40?
Yeah, I think this maybe helps you, especially if he does make a loan move. Let's say it's Manchester United, and he shines, and he's got the World Cup. I think that potential sell-on fee is more, and that's really the bottom line. Because if you're only going to give 25 or 30 for Christian Pulisic, they might just say, to hell with it. We'll keep him around for another year.
You really think that's the open market for him. You just told me that Anthony Robinson was rumored $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And now Christian Pulisic's
Well, Christian Pulisic, it's all the context, right? Year on his contract, this and that. Like,
same thing with Anthony Robinson.
Yes, his is done in 2024 as well. Right.
You know? So what are we talking about here? If that's the case, there's going to be a fire sale for a whole lot of players. Christian Pulisic is going to go for more than $40 million.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's the price we've already read heading into the World Cup. Now with his World Cup performance, it has to go higher. I don't – anything under $40 million, and you should jump on that if you're –
And it all depends on the timing, because if it's a sale now in January, then it's the World Cup is what's factoring in on that value. If it's a sale in June, it's Summer what sale, happens yeah. in the next few months.
True.
And if that's not playing at Chelsea, pew, that value drops. And if it's playing and playing
and look,
well somewhere else on loan, that value continues
look,
Seb, to go up.
We normally don't see winter transfers, like big winter transfers.
I think we will. You don't think we will this time because of the World Cup and
but
everything?
But I think we yeah. will because yeah. of the World Cup. Thank yep. you.
All right, so let's jump off the transfer wire and get to today's action, where we had not one, but two very, very interesting games.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Quarterfinal field is set at the 2022 World Cup after today's doubleheader. We'll start with Morocco against Spain. This one went about as you thought it might. Spain with 75% of the possession and one measly shot on goal over not 90, but 120 minutes. It was scoreless after 90, scoreless after extra time. They go to penalties. Pablo Sarabia, a specialist, missed his penalty. Then Sergio Busquets and Carlos Soler saw their penalty saved by Bono, the Moroccan goalie, who of course plays in La Liga. Ashraf Hakimi converts the winner as Morocco wins the penalty shootout 3-0 after a scoreless draw. Lots to break down on this game.
Bono Sevilla? Come on. Bono Sevilla, right?
Yes.
Yes.
What did I say?
No, no, you're right. You said La Liga and it reminded me of playing Sevilla.
Yes.
Well,
nothing, nothing. You just love to correct me even when I'm not
no,
wrong.
No, I'm asking you a question.
let's go big picture here.
Okay.
Because I think if there's anything about Spain, we kind of associate them with tiki-taka, right? Bossing the ball. And the statistics there tell you 75% possession. Is tiki-taka dead?
It's been dead.
Really?
Hey. With the exception of Real Madrid in the Champions League.
Which is not tiki-taka.
Right. Very far from
right.
it. It's anti-tiki-taka, if you will. Look how far the Spanish clubs get.
Sure. Look at where was tiki-taka born? It's born at Barcelona. And look how
demise,
that club has dropped
demise,
off. Now, that has
right.
a lot to do with
financial
other
and
things.
Bad decisions. Of course, of course.
But football has changed, hasn't it?
You're reading my mind again. And I know you've heard me say this, okay?
Wow.
Football has changed. And to
what
me, this all started in 2018 with the rise of France.
With what France did
and
that
how France did it. What they did and how they did it. How explosive, how vertical, how direct they were. Special players, yes. It's not sitting back. It's not countering. It's being direct. Jurgen Klopp, his style, heavy metal football with Liverpool. Football is changing. And the teams that change with it and get younger are the teams that are doing well. Spain is a very young team, but they're a young team and doing things a different way. You can touch the ball as many times as you'd like. It's where you touch it. It's how you affect the game while trying to employ your DNA, right? Morocco sat back, they defended, they were disciplined, and had clear chances on goal. What was his name? Chidari? Two clear chances towards the end of the game. Like, literally, put the game away. It's over, Morocco, let's head home. Let's send all these Moroccan fans in the stadium, because there were a lot of them.
Yes, yeah.
Home happy. Two clear chances.
Spain had some clear chances, too.
You just told me they shot once on goal.
They got one shot on goal, but they did have 10 shots overall. Some of those shots just missed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, those counted
as chances.
What did
you think was closer?
No, I'll agree with you that Morocco, for having 23% of the ball, was the more dangerous team.
No, and no, I think just in general was the more dangerous team.
That's the indictment.
Just in general was not for what they had possession for was the most – in general, they were the most dangerous team. If you look at the actual plays, you're like, this has got to be over – it was for Morocco. Like, I understand what you're saying. In or around the box, lots of shots, lots of chances. But Bono wasn't really...
No, he literally one shot on goal. So that means the max he could have had was one save, right?
And even the one towards the end that goes off the post.
Yes. It's a tight angle.
Could have been offsides, right?
Yeah. But,
and it's a very tight angle. Yeah. I mean, it's a great shot, honestly, how he got that off. Football is changing. Morocco was already a very difficult team to contend with. Mm-hmm. They were already feeling themselves. They won their group. Remember, Spain came in second in their group. Yeah. Very talented players. Same Moroccan team that back in January had a run of 31 games unbeaten.
Yep.
I know we keep going back to, but the U.S. beat them 3-0 and all these other things.
Yeah, that was a different Morocco. We have to point that out. We'll give Morocco their flowers in a second. Let's keep the focus here on Spain. There was a moment in last summer's European Championships. Actually, they scored five in their quarterfinal against Croatia in extra times in there, too. So
was it against Sweden? Is that the one you're going for?
No, in the semifinal, Spain plays Italy.
Okay.
And Spain, for me, was by far the better team. And it's a young team, and I'm thinking... And that's why I think I had very high expectations of them in this tournament. And at that point, I thought, well, maybe Tiki-Taka isn't dead. But I actually think that's the perfect game because they were so... superior in that match, unlike today, they had the possession but weren't superior. They were so much better in that match than Italy and still couldn't win it. Yeah. And that's the problem with this Tiki-Taka, and specifically with the Spain team, that they don't have a guy up front. They don't have a Torres. You know, they don't have a David Villa.
Morata scored three goals. Like, that's to me, like, I know what you're
and
going
And he wasn't even a lockdown starter.
He was Asensio. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
This is where I'm confused a little with Spain. It's not so much the tiki-taka and not being that goal dangerous, even though they can be. They've proven it. It's the way that they can be broken down. And not, I don't mean breaking them down with the ball. You saw how Japan pressed them?
Yeah.
And tiki-taka never before was, that was bad from the back. Like, how do we let that go? It was that way against Japan. They were doing self-inflicting wounds. They were themselves were hurting themselves, trying to build out of the back. And at times today, Morocco, I thought, was going to fall into the same trap because early on in that game, the first half, Morocco's trying to play out of everything. Out of everything. I'm like, what are they doing here? And they had dangerous half moments. The Spanish national team.
There's a phrase, defending with the ball. I think that's like perfect for Spain, but it's to a fault. It's like literally when they don't have the ball, and maybe there's a comparison here with Mexico and CONCACAF in the last World Cup qualifying cycle, they were super vulnerable. Yeah. And that's the problem. If you can defend with the ball and keep it away, and that's your best defense, but you can't be useless in defense. And I think that's sometimes what we're seeing from these teams that boss the ball. It's like when they don't have it, they literally fall apart. And that's super problematic. Because at a World Cup level.
You had Llorente playing out of position today, and he was getting abused down that left-hand side, his right-hand side.
How much of this is on the manager, Luis Enrique? Because I feel like anytime you talk about a favorite going out, and I know they were the second place team, but I still think, according to the odds makers and the computers, they were favored over Morocco. And especially for Spain, a country with significant footballing history and high expectations, when you go out in the round of 16, you're going to get hammered as the manager. How much of this is on him?
He shares a great deal of responsibility because he picks a style, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could say, well, the pool indicates the style. He's going with a lot of these younger players. And there's no Sergio Ramos on here, right? There's no experienced player like that. It's a lot of the same DNA. Lots of Barcelona players. Shout out to José del Valle, said they can't win with all these Europa League players.
Remind me who José del Valle supports again?
Guatemala.
Club level?
Real Madrid?
Yes, he's a very famous Real Madrid fan. Of course, you see him on Jorge Ramos y su banda. famous for his Real Madrid fandom.
Yeah. So it is on the manager. It is on the coach. Yes. And maybe, just maybe, he put unnecessary pressure on his team in this World Cup.
Doing what specifically?
You know what? The Twitch.
Okay.
Yeah. So right now there's a big conversation in España amongst a lot of our colleagues where, like, a lot of the Spanish press was hoping, waiting, praying for this fracaso to rub it into Luis Enrique's face. They don't like everything that Luis Enrique has done with this Twitch channel. It's almost like it's a slap in the face to the
traditional press
yeah. in
it's
Spain.
It's like, oh, you're just going to talk to the fans directly? Well, what about us? What's our role then? But is that fair?
No.
Right, because it's like how much
I love this new media.
Right.
I think we actually are part of this new media. I love this new media. I love what he's doing. Listen, people need to realize oftentimes with the press, when you're an athlete, when you're a footballer per se, they know you through the press. Your voice or how you're perceived is how the press paints you. Mm. So now you take away this power, and it's almost like they feel helpless.
Yeah.
It's almost like, how dare you? This isn't the way it's supposed to go. And we saw it with Lionel Messi at PSG. The very first interview he had at PSG was with Ibai. It was with a Spanish YouTuber.
Right.
Streamer. And the proper press, the traditional press, just had a field day. How dare you?
Right.
Football is changing. And Luis Enrique went against that grain, and he made a lot of enemies.
I saw the Twitch yesterday, so it would have been from the night before, so two nights out from the game, and man, he is in a loose mood. He's laughing and joking. I saw kind of a compilation, a cut up of it, and I was just thinking, they better not lose this game.
Is this when he said, I had my players practice 1,000 penalties each?
Well, so that's something, of all the things, right? And there was another moment in the press conference where he's challenged by the Spanish press, like, have you been working on the things that aren't working? And he kind of snaps. So the tension is readily evident, and that's definitely going to affect how he's covered. The penalty comments, that's the one thing I think where he misfired. He talks about, I've told my guys, you know, after the European Championships, you got to take 1,000 penalties. You got to be doing it at club. It's not just a lottery. Da 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 da. I think that's something you say after the penalty, after you win the penalty shootout, not before you have it, because you are literally giving ammunition to the press.
Yeah, when things don't go well. And penalties are difficult, regardless what some numbnuts will say out there.
Okay, Morocco, let's give them their flowers. What do you think of this team? And is this the end of the road for them, or are they capable of more in this tournament?
Capable of more would be Portugal, is what you're saying.
Yep, that's next.
Yeah, would be beating Portugal. Oh, my goodness, this is a hard one. I love this Moroccan team.
Okay.
Go ahead and share with the crowd what your boy told you would happen in Spain versus Morocco.
You picked it. I think. Oh, about if we have the bracket now. But you've seen the bracket here on Football Americas. You did pick Morocco to advance.
I love the way they play.
Okay.
I love how defensively sound they are. I love how disciplined. I love how they all battle. It's physically impossible to keep the same pace, and that is my worry with them. You saw the captain literally tweaking his hammy. They were tying it back together.
Right. 120 minutes is a lot.
120 minutes. It was penalty kicks that you advance in. You could only play this way for so long against what for me looks like a very fresh Portugal team that all of a sudden has a ton of belief and a ton of talent. They kept Cristiano Ronaldo out of this lineup and still drilled this Switzerland team that's not that easy to play against. Say what you will. Yep. They're not an easy team to play against. I love my Moroccan friends.
Uh-oh.
I want to say,
here comes the butt.
Do it for Africa, because Morocco's been one of the best fan bases out here.
So I think
I would feel to see them go, but I think this is the end of the road for them.
I get your points there. I think it's worth noting what you say about the fan bases, because we were hearing from our colleagues that were at this game that it was not like 75-25, 80-20. It was like 90-10. Right now, you know, where producer Beto and I are staying, it may as well be Casablanca.
Yeah.
All Morocco fans. And I think that plays a role. The one thing I will say about this Morocco team, what I like about their story, is their federation had the guts to do what Mexico's federation did not. 3 months before the tourney, they fired their coach. Principally, they fired their coach because he was leaving two guys out. Right, those two guys are in the starting lineup tonight. They play a huge role. And I think it's something to be said for, look, you may be going down a road, but when you see, and we talked about how did they look against the United States, right? They got shelled 3-0 in that. You may say, oh, well, we've gone down this road, we need to see it out. Their federation had the guts to say, no, we're gonna change course here 3 months before the World Cup. And I think it's huge. I don't think without Mazraoui, and I don't think without Ziyech, they win this game.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. They had the courage and the guts to do what you didn't want them to do.
What's that?
You didn't want Tata fired 3 months before the World Cup.
I didn't?
You didn't want him fired back in March.
Roll the tape.
We'll roll the tape. You actually thought it was dumb that I said after they lost Gold Cup that this would happen.
Gold Cup? Roll the tape. Gold Cup was 2 years ago. Gold Cup was 2 years ago.
It was not 2 years ago.
All right, let's talk about Portugal and Switzerland, because Herc didn't see the rundown and already started to discuss
it. No, you have to if you're going to speak against Morocco at the end of the road.
This game was not nearly as tense, we'll put it that way. Gonzalo Ramos.
It was kind of
tense. That's right, Gonzalo Ramos, who started the game up front for that man, Cristiano Ronaldo, who was on the bench, opened the scoring in the 17th minute. Pepe, at 39 years old, made it 2-0. In the 33rd, Ramos would add his second in the 51st minute. 4 minutes after that, Rafael Guerreiro made it 4-0. Ramos sealed his hat trick on 67. Rafael Leao with a stoppage time goal for his sixth. Akanji getting el gol del honor for Switzerland in the 58th in a game that finishes. That is not a typo. 6-1. But the big decision in this one from Fernando Santos after all the controversy following Ronaldo's substitution at the end of the South Korea match was to bench CR7. Were Portugal better without him?
Are you asking that?
Yes.
Of course they were better without him. I mean, it was 6-1. The guy that comes in for Cristiano Ronaldo scores a hat trick, youngest goal scorer of this tournament, and also youngest goal scorer of the hat trick, I think, in World Cup history. Gonzalo Ramos just happened to be the name. The story here is Cristiano Ronaldo. They were better without Cristiano Ronaldo. That just doesn't happen by chance. Cristiano Ronaldo right now is a lot of things. In his prime, he is not. He's a very good player. Very good player. But Portugal definitely looked a stronger team without Cristiano Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo offensively, there are a few things he does very well. Defensively, tactically, for the team, there are things that he's not done throughout his career.
Right.
Not done or not been beneficial for Portugal in these latter years. I don't know how we can sit here and say they weren't better without him.
So, Fernando Santos, the manager, and for those who haven't seen it, the big controversy here is how Ronaldo leaves the field against South Korea. And he's seen to be mouthing to the camera what looks to be like, what's the rush? Why are you rushing to take me off the field?
Right.
Santos is asked about this in a press conference. He says, I didn't like it at all. We're going to handle this internally. Benching Cristiano Ronaldo after you started him in the first three games is not necessarily...
And after you said you didn't like it publicly.
Right. Doesn't seem to be handling it internally. I guess what I'm not really sure at is why he came into the game then, right, at the end. Like, is that an olive branch from the manager? Because if you want to send a message, 6-1 without him is a pretty strong message.
It was 5-1, I believe.
Well, but I'm saying you could have finished that game off at 6-1 without him.
No, but what I'm trying to say to you is I believe 5-1 when he comes in, when Cristiano comes in. That's the olive branch he's trying to send right there because he's hoping Cristiano scores. Cristiano is happy when he scores. Cristiano's not happy when Gonzalo Ramos is scoring 1, 2, or 3. And in the way he scores, in the way he finished those plays, you could say it's Switzerland. Switzerland had a bad day, whatever the case. Cristiano Ronaldo's not going to care.
Right.
Cristiano Ronaldo cares about Cristiano Ronaldo. That's a reality. This Portugal team was better for the Fernando Santos decision.
Yeah.
That's another reality. Now, the bigger question is, olive branch or not,
right,
who's starting next game?
Right. So he's got one goal in the five, right, so far, and it's a penalty. I mean, that's not Cristiano Ronaldo-like numbers. Do you think Santos, because this will inform the answer to your question, do you think Santos used the drama as an excuse to do something that he's kind of been wanting to do? Because my point is, he's clearly at some point thought that Ronaldo made this team better. That's why he started him in the first three games. You don't do that because you think he doesn't give you the best shot. So is this kind of, was this his out for Fernando Santos as a manager? And now that it's gone well, I mean, he doesn't, like, he has, now he doesn't have to go back to Ronaldo.
No, I don't think so, because he
So you don't.
He was with Ronaldo throughout all World Cup qualifying.
So this was not a tactical decision at all.
Listen, World Cup qualifying.
This was straight up discipline.
He's with Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right.
In the World Cup qualifying playoff, he's with Cristiano Ronaldo. It just so happened that this rubbed him the wrong way, and like, hey, sit out this one.
Well, if that's
and
the
it's
case,
Sergio Ramos who comes in and they do well with.
Yeah.
So he's got to go back to the well with Sergio. I'm sorry, with Gonzalo Ramos.
Yeah.
So Sergio, why do I keep saying Sergio?
So
Ramos has to go and start again, and Santos has no decision but to start him again, with all the talent they have. It's not even about the talent anymore. It's about getting the right pieces on the field to help you win.
Wow.
It's what it is.
What's Ronaldo like as a bench player? Will he accept that role? I mean,
listen, you got Rafa Leao.
I feel like that could blow up the
dressing
room.
You got Bruno Fernandes. You got Silva. There's too much talent for you to worry about one player, regardless if it's Cristiano Ronaldo.
Even if it's
Ronaldo. You've got to try and win a World Cup with this talented generation that you have.
Okay. So you mentioned you think that Portugal are kind of favorites over Morocco for
yes.
you pretty heavily.
Yes.
Let's take a look at what the computers and the odds makers are saying about the matchup that will eventually decide one of the semifinalists here at the 2022 World Cup. All right. Well, we see the odds for Netherlands, Argentina, Croatia, Brazil, England, France. The computer's still working on the math for Morocco and Portugal. Speaking of the Dutch, Louis van Gaal, their manager, has had a lot of interesting things to say throughout this tournament. Talked about the American strategy and Greg Berhalter. Now, in that game against the U.S., Netherlands scored a really, really good goal. The first
goal.
Right? We talked about
touches.
Just how beautiful. You know who else scored a beautiful goal?
Who?
Brazil. In their round of 16 win. While Louis van Gaal was comparing those two goals, let's hear what the Dutch manager had to say.
Brazilië heb ik gisteren ook een stuk van gezien. Nou, die spelen eigenlijk hetzelfde voetbal als het Nederlands elftal, hè? Vanuit een compacte defensie. Schakelen ze heel snel om. En het gekke is dat ik dan in de media lees van mijn vrienden. Dat sprankelend voetbal was, en terwijl wij dat ook hebben gedaan. En wij hebben ook gescoord. Nee, onze goal was veel mooier. Dat was een team goal. Dat gaat boven alles uitstijgen.
Ja?
Ja, ja, ja.
Is dat het mooiste moment van de WK te doen?
Ja, tot nu toe wel, ja. 20 keer in zo'n hoog tempo. Ja, dat was echt een super goal.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Herc, it's like picking between your children. Are we telling Van Gaal to get lost, or is he speaking truth here? Was the Dutch goal better or the Brazilian goal better?
I like how they capped off the Brazilian goal. Mm-hmm. The play, interplay in the final third, interplay in the box, if you will, almost walked it in.
Yeah.
I think Richarlison has the best two goals of the tournament, for my money.
Good shout. I saw the one against Serbia live. You were
yes,
there, too.
Yes.
Pretty great.
But the Netherlands scored a pretty classy goal against the U.S. men's national team. They already had possession before it went back to the goalkeeper.
Yep.
Before it went back to Nepert. And then it's literally 19, then 20 Memphis Depay in the back of the net. 20 touches after it goes to the goalkeeper and you get scored on. If you're the U.S. men's national team, it might as well have been Brazil.
Which one would you say had a higher level of difficulty?
Brazil's.
Okay, interesting.
Yes.
But you like the Netherlands one more?
No, I still like Brazil's.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's like a taste thing, right? And I actually think both goals fit each team's style and history adequately, right? Like the Dutch is a kind of slower buildup that then super accelerates, very clean one-touch passing one end of the field to the other. Beautiful one-time stuff. In the Brazilian goal, we get juggling, we get flair, we get beautiful dummies, intricate runs, a sick finish. Like, if you're Brazilian, I think you
and a better celebration.
And a way better celebration, eh? A way better celebration. So, but that's the point, right, is that I think if you're Brazilian, you think the Brazilian goal is better. If you're Dutch, based on what you've thought, you think the Dutch goal is better.
Dutch goal was very good.
Yeah.
Very good team goal. I still think the Brazilian goal is better.
Okay, you know who wasn't all that impressed? Well, not with the Brazilian goal. But with the celebrations that you mentioned about the Brazilian goal, this will come as a just shocking surprise to you. Roy Keane on Brazil's dancing celebrations. I think it's disrespectful dancing like that every time they score. I don't mind the first jig or whatever it was for the first goal, but not every time. Jig. It's disrespectful. Even their manager gets involved. I don't like it. Roy Keane doesn't like it. Are you cool with it, Herc? The dancing from the Brazilians.
You don't like it? Don't let them score.
Right.
That's the easy.
Did you hear any South Korean complaints about it after
no.
the game?
No. And if you're South Korea, don't let them score.
Right.
If you're the next opponent, you don't want to see them dance. Don't let them score. It's as easy as that. You score the goal. Do what you want. This is dumb. This is like a few years back when the women played in the World Cup, and it was Thailand, right?
Yes.
And it was 13-0, and they started. It's a World Cup. This is what you dream about. This is the biggest moment in your sporting career. Celebrate it, dance it, sing it, bring out flyers if you want. I don't care. It's your moment, and the fact that you scored the goal allows you to do that. People pay to be entertained. If you don't like that, stop it on the field. That's the only way you should be able to stop it. Let them have their moment.
Is there a line for you between players and managers?
No.
No, we don't hold them to different standards of comportment?
No. This to me, if you're against this, you must be the same guy or person.
You're a lot of fun at parties.
That's against Luis Enrique having a Twitch channel.
Right.
Like,
right.
Stop.
Old
with
school.
It.
A little too old school for
this
you.
This is why certain sports are dying.
Yeah.
Right? They don't.
Baseball, they don't let you chuck the bat up in the air or whatever it is.
You said baseball was dying. Not me.
Tiche has hit back. He says, I have to be careful because there are always the nasty ones who say it is disrespect. It is a demonstration of joy, a celebration. He's basically backing up what you said. Hey, this is who we are. Yeah. If you don't like
it. Who says jig, by the way?
I don't know. Everybody has their own terminologies, right? Let's talk more transfer news. This time, not U.S. men's national team related, Mexican national team related on the men's side as well. Alexis Vega, who has been linked to a couple Premier League teams. One of them, Herc, is Chelsea, the other being Wolves, who reportedly have interest in the Mexican international following his performance in the World Cup. Herc, is Alexis Vega ready for the Premier League? Wolves? And I know there's a pretty big gap between
Wolves?
Chelsea and Wolves.
Yeah.
Really?
Wolves? That's a relegation battling team who scored, what are they, 3-4 goals all season?
I don't have the stats in front of me, but if you looked it up, sure.
No, I think that's what it is. It's like 3-4 goals all season.
They had Raul Jimenez playing forward, so they couldn't have scored that many goals.
Wasn't playing forward for them. And they had Diego Costa playing forward. So a few insurance policies there that they no doubt tried to bag in order to secure their first division status. Mm-hmm. Can he play at that? Sure. I think Alexis Vega has a few things going for him over a lot of the Mexican pool. He's got great technical ability, and he plays football or can play football at the rate of the modern game with speed, with power, with directness. Verticality. Oh, I love that word. I'm going to miss that word.
Yeah.
But I love that word. He does these things very well. He can assist. He takes just as much joy in assisting as he does scoring goals. He's exciting. He's strong. He's really strong. Deceivingly strong for his size. I think he'd be a good relegation battle type of player. I don't see him going to a Chelsea. I don't see Chelsea going for an Alexis
right.
Vega.
I mean, he would be a squad player at Chelsea at the very best, right? Like,
Do you see him playing over Ziyech?
No, I don't know. I mean,
Ziyech barely plays there.
Can I be honest about Alexis Vega? Like, how good of a World Cup do you think he had? And even we
for
can
Mexico,
say
Mexico, I thought he had one of the better World Cups. Yeah.
Like enough to draw the attention of Premier League teams?
Now, did you hear what I said there?
Yeah, nobody on
Mexico.
Yeah, no, but I'm not putting that caveat. I'm saying, like, how good do you think he played in this World Cup? Because to me,
what was his most dangerous moment?
I think the first game against Poland is the best that he was. Against Saudi Arabia, I don't think he's that good. And against Argentina, he's...
Producer Beto just said it.
What?
Against Saudi Arabia, it's the opening, what, you say 8 minutes? 8 minutes?
Mm-hmm. He played so well. How long did he last in that game?
Hold on. No. This is what we're trying to get at. Okay. Where we are with you. Relax. We're on your side. Okay? Opening minutes versus Saudi Arabia, he had a 1v1 with the goalkeeper. That he played, should have chipped it. I know it's easier said than done. 1v1, and he misses. That was his most dangerous moment of the whole tournament.
Right.
Other than that, you have to go back to Argentina where there's a free kick that Dibu Martinez literally catched.
For the cameras.
He literally caught the ball.
Yeah.
He literally caught it. That's the most disrespectful thing you could do if you're hitting a free kick is when they catch it on you. It's a diving catch, it's disrespectful Dibu Martinez. That's the two most dangerous moments. And I'm a huge fan of Alexis Vega. But he didn't quite show you anything in this World Cup where if you're a scout, international scout,
that's
you're not jumping out of your seat going, ooh-wee!
Right.
Look at this guy. We got to sign him.
Yeah. So I thought he could argue one of the best players for Mexico against Poland in that game. Argentina, I think you have to give him a pass because actually early in that game, he made a couple plays where he tips the ball off somebody, but he was hopeless. He was 1-on-3. He was alone.
Give him a pass in that game.
Yeah, because I think it's an income. Like if we were grading him in that game, him and Chucky were just, I mean, they were not there. What were they going to do in that game?
No, I'm with you. Yeah. But this is what I'm saying. There's nothing.
If he didn't do anything to draw.
If I am saying pick one player of these 22 players, well, whole game was ugly.
Can I ask you another question about Alexis Vega? And I know producer Beto's going to get all bitter because he's a Chivas guy, right? And we all have our perspectives. I like America, so maybe that colors how I see Alexis Vega.
I don't like either, so go ahead.
If we talk about dominating to get to the next level, is he a dominant Liga MX player?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So to me, dominant means every single game you are a difference maker. Are there moments when he's dominant? Yes. Is he a dominant Liga MX player?
Seb, he's a difference maker in Liga MX. If you actually go, and you know I hate expected goals. Hold on. I hate expected goals, and I love productive players.
Okay, but now you're going to use it. Right.
Because they paint a picture. The team with the highest expected goals in all Liga MX was actually Chivas, which is insane when you look at it. Alexis Vega was by far, far and away, the most important player they've had, they have. Far and away, the only one that would ever make you think
That's a reflection of Chivas, not Alexis Vega.
Of Alexis Vega. It's a reflection of Alexis Vega.
But that's because Chivas is in a down moment right now.
Fine.
You have to say
Monterrey
that.
Monterrey was willing to pay him 3 times his salary to go to Monterrey. He's one of the hottest commodities in Liga MX. Mm-hmm. Other coaches speak highly of him. Larcamón, when asked who are the 3 best players in Liga MX, names Alexis Vega. He has his choice of guys like Nico Ibáñez, of guys like Belterrame, of guys like Gignac, and he's naming Alexis Vega as one of them. He's a very good Liga MX player, to answer your question. The problem isn't how good are you in Liga MX, it's how good can you be at the next level.
You talk a lot about final product.
Yeah.
Do you think his final product is where it needs to be?
Absolutely not.
Okay, that's for me part of being dominant. Let me throw
That has a lot more to do with you playing in Chivas for the better part of the last 3-4 years than it does anything else.
Let me throw one more because we're putting Chelsea aside and Wolves is, as you say, a potential team to be relegated in the Premier League. We know Chivas has this deal with PSV.
They do.
Would that be a better fit than a Wolves? And back to that conversation of...
Yes, he would do very well in Eredivisie.
And he would get European football a chance at it,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you say that
step
over
to take him to the next step. It wouldn't be the next step.
Yeah, yeah. And I would just worry about going to a team that's bad for Alexis Vega, like, and a team that doesn't attack very well for Alexis Vega. I don't think Wolves is a good fit in that regard, even though he probably paid a lot more than PSV.
You ready?
Showtime
on May 3rd. Summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Time to check the mentions here. What have the... you said we should not read the Twitter comments, even though we have a segment on the show dedicated to it. Let's check the mentions. See what the good friends from social media are asking us. Where does CONCACAF rank? Against confederations such as Oceania, Asia, and Africa. I'll save you the letters there. Herc?
Oceania better than.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically New
Africa,
Zealand.
Africa, no way. I think it's fighting for that second place with the Asian Confederation. And if there was a tournament with only Asia and CONCACAF, I don't think CONCACAF wins.
Are we being prisoners of the moment? Because CONCACAF had a bad World Cup, but if we go back to like 2014, CONCACAF had a great World Cup.
Do you think any of the teams beat Japan?
Can any of the teams in CONCACAF beat Japan?
No, in a tournament, you think any of the CONCACAF teams in this tournament beat Japan?
Again, if I'm being a prisoner of the moment, no. This Japanese team is ahead of.
Well, the tweet is.
I think a USA Japan game, the way USA played in this tournament, would be a great matchup. Yeah, I do think that'd be a great matchup.
Compared to the way that Japan played in this tournament.
Yeah, yeah. I think you don't think the U.S. could hang with the Japan.
I mean, they had a go at it a month ago. How'd that go?
Again, that was not the U.S. team that performed in this tournament, was it?
This Japan team beat Spain and Germany. I think you're discrediting the Japanese team.
I've loved them all along.
Not enough.
I just don't think they're miles ahead of the United States.
I never said that. Who do you think wins?
I think the U.S. on a given day could absolutely be. If they play 10 times, it'd be 5-5.
Halter. Jeez. Who wins the game?
I don't know. We have to see how it's played. I think the U.S. could absolutely beat Japan.
Oh, I agree with you. They could absolutely beat Japan on their day. Who do you think wins?
Japan hit a higher level in this tournament.
Okay.
If I'm going off the four games that they got in this tournament.
Higher level.
I'll say Japan hit a higher level.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So if they play 10 times based off that, I'd give it 6-4. Maybe.
Okay.
Not much, though.
Okay.
Is the U.S. men's national team as a program trending in a better direction than the U.S. women's
Go ahead, Seb. Go ahead. This is catered for you.
Absolutely. Trending in a better direction. Absolutely. Now, niveles. No?
No. Trending in a better direction.
Right. Like, when you're the two-time World Cup champion, it's hard to trend anywhere but down, right, from there. I don't know that the U.S. women's national team is in 4, 8, 12 years going to still be at the very top of women's football. In fact, I doubt that they will because we're seeing a...
Ever?
I think we're seeing a ton of investment and growth to the point about discussions before in places like Spain, in places like Italy, in places like France,
I think that's
in places like Germany. And I think that those countries,
the culture around those countries with the game.
And I think that's the point.
Yes.
The United States is still learning how to produce footballers.
Which is the most important thing for competing at that level.
And what the United States did for women was not produce footballers, but was produce great women athletes because of Title IX. So there were, and because of the size of the country, there were millions and millions of young girls and eventually women who were playing soccer at a time when the rest of the world didn't have a
100%.
Title IX. And that's why the U.S. women are dominant.
Concur.
But as countries like Spain, who really know how to develop technical players, start to focus the resources and the proper coaching on the women's game, you bet your bottom dollar they're eventually going to overtake the United
States. Spain, England, who else? Germany. Really quickly, do the U.S. players, does the U.S. program right now count with the most technical players on Earth?
The U.S. women's team? No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No, definitely not. I think anybody who watched last summer's European Championships will have seen a level of technical ability that we haven't seen from the U.S. or, frankly, any of their opponents. I think that's a big part of the U.S. problem. They take on teams in Speaking of the U.S. women's national
team, Kate.
Our former colleague, Kate Markgraf, found out last night at halftime of the NCAA Division I Women's Soccer Championship game that she would be going into the Hall of Fame. long overdue for
the last of the 99ers. That
exactly,
is insane.
The last of the starters from the 99 team to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. She'll go in as part of the class of 2023.
Congrats.
And her work is not just limited on the field. She's, of course, helping run the women's national team now with U.S. Soccer. Great work as a broadcaster. And it was actually at halftime of this game, which was an incredible game, Herc. UCLA down 2-1 against North Carolina with 15 seconds left. Score a goal on this corner kick. Maybe there was a foul, but we'll leave that for another time. And then they eventually win 3-2. And the big story here is Marguerite Auzaza, their coach, becomes the first rookie coach, so her first time as a head coach, to win the NCAA women's soccer title. Amazing, amazing night, an amazing finish to a great season for UCLA. And congratulations there to their first-year head coach.
That's what I'm talking about. Develop coaches as well. Mm. That's the next level, not just players.
And it's a good shout off the conversation that we had the other night about coaching opportunities for women, right? We saw men's soccer Division III national title team coached by a woman. You have to create opportunities and spaces for women to coach. UCLA took a gamble there, hiring a first-year head coach, and it paid off. And we see it. We've seen what happens at the NWSL. Lots of men's coaches. Lots of men's coaches in the women's game in college. You get down into the youth game, girls are being coached by men. What message does that send? How's that going to inspire a girl to want to be a coach someday? That'll do it for us here on Football Americas. As Herc mentioned, we get a day off tomorrow. There's a break in the action here at the World Cup, so we're going to take a break as well. But we will be back on Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, live. Right here on ESPN Plus. For Herc, producer Beto, the technical team here, Bristol and Los Angeles, thanks for watching. We'll see you Thursday.